Still, the U.S. resoundingly came to Israel's defense, which was surprising. And it wasn't just the U.S., by the way, it was France and the U.K., which have also been growing impatient with Israel, and most remarkably, Jordan.
Welcome to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I'm Peter Hamby. It's Wednesday, April 17th. Today, I'm joined by Julia Yaffe to talk about Iran's attack on Israel over the weekend and how it illustrates the absurdly complicated politics in the region and what the response to the attacks says about America's complicated relationship with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. As Julia explains, while global opinion might be against Bibi, the politics of Israel suggest he isn't going anywhere anytime soon. We'll discuss all that and much, much more on today's episode of The Powers That Be.
You hear that? Your dog knows. Spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to the Powers That Be. Nothing has crystallized the international dilemma and the dilemma in Washington over Bibi Netanyahu like the last few weeks. First, the global community was coming down hard on the Israeli prime minister following the killing of seven World Central Kitchen workers in Israel. They were just there to distribute food in Gaza. And then on Saturday night, over the weekend, Iran started to launch a bunch of drones and attacks in Israel. And suddenly, the world, or at least the parts of the world and parts of the international coalition that support Israel, had to come to Bibi's defense. Joining me to explain this dilemma and what happens with Netanyahu internationally, but also inside Israel and the politics there is, of course, Julia Yaffe. Julia, you wrote a really, really, really smart, detailed piece about this that popped on Monday. Can you explain the U.S. and Washington side of this story first? We'll talk about the internal Israeli politics later in the episode, but how did the U.S. deal with Netanyahu and the Israeli government after the Iranian attacks as compared to the few days before?
Well, here's the thing, is between the World Central Kitchen attack and the Iranian attack, there was also another attack about 2 weeks ago when Israel, we think, probably hit an Iranian consulate in Damascus, Syria, killing a Quds Forces general, his deputy, and five other IRGC officers. Now, people have told me that the shingle on the consulate went up like 2 weeks before the strike, and what were these IRGC commanders doing inside the consulate? That said, whether it was, you know, posted 2 weeks or 2 days before the strike, it was still under the Vienna Convention dictating diplomatic relations between countries. It was still considered by international law a diplomatic outpost and thereby a sovereign piece of Iranian territory. And there were people, including in Israel and in the U.S., who felt like this was not good timing, Israel. This was not a way to not spread the war to the broader Middle East. You know, I spoke to one person in Israel who was like, sure, you may have had great intelligence, very specific intelligence, but like, let's think about the broader implications of hitting an Iranian diplomatic facility that is basically Iranian soil when the Middle East is already a tinderbox. And organizations like Hamas would love for this to spread into a larger war. So that's what the retaliation, that's what the Iranian strike on Saturday was about. It was a retaliation for that. Now, the Biden administration was not very happy with the Bibi government for hitting that diplomatic outpost and for not warning them beforehand. I think the Israelis probably knew that if they had warned us, the U.S. probably would have said, eh, maybe you shouldn't do that right now. Maybe give it a, you know, give it a couple beats. And still, despite everything that had happened leading up to Saturday night, the World Central Kitchen workers being killed, the strike on the diplomatic facility, the growing frustration over the way Israel has conducted its war in Gaza and not allowed aid into Gaza, still the U.S. resoundingly came to Israel's defense, which was surprising. And it wasn't just the U.S., by the way. It was France and the U.K., which have also been growing impatient with Israel. And most remarkably, Jordan, which has this kind of sub rosa intelligence sharing partnership with Israel. But most of its population, the majority of its population, is of Palestinian descent. And Jordan has been very critical of Israel for how it's been waging this war. But Jordan shot down some 20% of the drones and cruise missiles that Iran sent toward Israel on Saturday night. So it was a remarkable show, not just of U.S. support for Israel, but global or international backing. A lot of the other Arab countries under pressure from the U.S. also shared intelligence with Israel about the upcoming Iranian attack, because the Iranians were telegraphing it in the days before the attack. They were briefing Gulf ambassadors to Tehran. So it was a remarkable show of support for Israel and a remarkable opportunity for Israel to reset.
Just this is a quick detour, Julia, but I found the Jordan involvement interesting. Obviously, Jordan is majority Sunni, Iran majority Shia, don't like each other, which is probably one reason they got involved. But it reminded me of a TikTok, actually, that I saw over the weekend from an Iranian-American attorney and creator activist named Elika Laban. And she kind of went viral online because she had seen some leftist voices on the internet kind of cheering on Iran for going after Israel, the sort, the same kind of, you know, neophyte young activists who have been, you know, very much attacking Israel this whole time. And she was like, do you guys understand the complications here? Like, do you remember literally a year or two ago, the women's uprising in Iran and the regime cracking down on the women? Like, Iran is not good. Like, we have to stop talking about these things in binaries. Again, this is a detour. I was just reminded of the complicated politics and religions and identities of the Middle East just because of Jordan getting involved in shooting down these missiles. Anyway.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like when those same people were cheering on the Houthis when they first started shooting missiles at or rockets at ships going through the Red Sea. And these neophytes, as you call them, I think accurately, totally bought the line that it was because, you know, these people are anti-capitalist and support the people of Palestine. And I actually was recently speaking with a very senior Western diplomat here in Washington. And they said, you know, the notion that the Houthis are doing this in solidarity with the people of Gaza is for the birds, this person literally said. And I thought that was right on the money. But again, it's this, yeah, it's like trying to, you know, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
So simplistic question, Julia, as it relates to U.S. foreign policy here. Is there hope within the blob, within the foreign policy establishment that, I know I feel like I ask you this every 6 weeks, that Netanyahu's tenure will come to an end at any time soon? Like, are they going to, I know it's, we don't run the nation of Israel, it's not up to us really, but like, how can Jake Sullivan and Joe Biden get rid of Bibi if they don't like him?
The thing is, they can't, as you said. And unfortunately, I think the more they try to get rid of him, the more he's going to stay. And the more I think there will be an impulse among his coalition and their supporters to be like, fuck you, we're not, as Bibi said, we're not a star on the American flag. And in fact, there was some, you know, consternation inside the Biden administration at Chuck Schumer, because they were like, it was not productive. You know, when Schumer said Bibi has to go, there have to be new elections. And they were like, yeah, we agree wholeheartedly. But that may have been a counterproductive way to go about messaging that. That said, I pretty much everyone I talk to thinks that, you know, before the end of the year, the coalition might fall and that would trigger new elections. Otherwise, it'll be another couple years. So, and you know who knows that more than anyone and feels that on the back of his neck? Bibi. And like his friend Trump, he's a survivor.
I'll take a quick break, Julia, and when we come back, I want to ask you about the politics inside of Israel and why Netanyahu might be able to serve for a few more years. Hey, Powers That Be listeners, I'm here to tell you that there's no reason to panic the next time you're searching for the perfect gift. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you a curated list of gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. I use Etsy all the time and have for years. I bought my brother some artwork. I bought my wife some jewelry. I even bought a rug for our living room on Etsy. I love it. But there's a lot of pressure around gifting. I usually have a hard time thinking of gift ideas for friends and family members around the holidays or birthdays in my life. And sometimes I get super stressed trying to find the perfect thing. But now with Gift Mode on Etsy, I can search hundreds of gifting personas and find so many incredible items. And I actually just found the perfect gift for a buddy who's just as into Cincinnati sports as I am, a hot cup of Joe Burrow mug. That's right, I found that on Etsy. It's amazing. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner or a birthday present for the pickleballer, Gift Mode has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
Do you wake up in a cold sweat from your work dreams?
Have a coworker who keeps inviting you to do escape rooms?
Can't get a coworker to agree to do escape rooms?
Or are you just genuinely not sure how to take the next step in your career?
I'm Kate.
And I'm Kim. And together we run Amy Poehler's company, Paper Kite Productions.
We've been friends and colleagues for years, so we know how important it is to feel like someone has your back at work.
And we want to be that for you.
So we're hosting a weekly advice show where we answer all your work-related questions.
Something amazing happened. I got offered my dream job.
How am I supposed to bring this up to him without hurting his feelings? What should I do?
I want to like skip the pleasantries without being an asshole.
Careful, money and friends, they don't mix, babes.
They don't. And don't work with your friends, make your friends at work.
All right, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but that was actually $1 million advice.
Whether you need advice or just love to listen to other people's problems, this show is for you.
Listen and follow Million Dollar Advice, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Powers That Be, everybody. I'm talking to Julia Yaffe about Benjamin Netanyahu. Stepping back, Julia, can you explain to listeners Netanyahu's coalition in Israel? Obviously, over there, it's not just Republicans and Democrats. There are many parties. There's a parliamentary system, and he's been able to maintain power for a very long time. But based on what politics, who are the people and what are the coalitions that support him and who doesn't?
Basically, Bibi is in power because of a coalition of freaks, of a right-wing, religious, xenophobic, Jewish supremacist freaks. Itamar Ben-Gvir, for example, notoriously was disqualified from mandatory service in the IDF because of his extremist views. And now he's the chief of police. And he's handing out guns to settlers and the Israeli population in the wake of October 7th, ostensibly for self-defense, but in part to help these settlers run roughshod over Palestinians in the West Bank. These are people who are far to the right of even some of the, you know, hardline Likudniks. They, you know, they don't care what happens with their relationship with America. They want to annex the West Bank. They want to resettle Gaza. And Bibi depends on them for his power. And they know that. And they flex their muscles every chance they get. And Bibi wants to stay in power, I think not just because of the corruption trial happening. Simultaneously, he's been charged with corruption a bazillion times now. But also because, I mean, he is a kind of authoritarian personality and he wants to stay in power forever. I don't know that he's one of those people, it's like a, you know, a shark who stops swimming. So he is doing whatever is necessary to keep his coalition intact. If the coalition, if somebody pulls out of the coalition, there are elections. And given Bibi's unpopularity in Israel, he would most likely lose those elections. So, I mean, Bibi himself is fucking nuts, but the people who are keeping him in power make his fucking nuts look sane. So that's one of the reasons you're seeing such insane policies coming out of Jerusalem these days.
Also, this might be based on that David Remnick profile of Netanyahu from a few months ago, but you also just need to realize that he is a true believer in the Jewish state in every way. And like beyond, you know, normal Israelis. He obviously, you know, supports settlements. He just doesn't like seem to care about Palestinians. He sees himself almost as a messiah and doesn't feel like the country will be better off if he steps aside.
Right. It's a kind of the kind of only me, only I can save you, which I think should sound familiar to American listeners. And also it's there's this kind of Jabotinsky-esque core to his philosophy, which is that liberal, you know, there's a long-running debate within the Zionist community and within the Jewish community, basically as long as Zionism has existed, which is, can liberal democracies or countries that liberalize their laws to give Jews equal rights and equal powers, which was, you know, then a big discussion in the 19th century and the early 20th century, can they protect Jews or can Jews only count on themselves? Can Jews not count on non-Jews to protect them, or will, or can they, or will non-Jews ultimately always turn against them and kill them all? And the Netanyahu family comes from the camp that believes that you can only count on your own tribe, that even the most liberal accepting democracy, the most accepting of Jews, will ultimately turn on them, and you can only count on other Jews, and only Jews can defend themselves. You can't count on anyone else. And you know, unfortunately, the Holocaust and the whole run of European history proved them right. And so he brings a lot of that to the prime ministership. And I mean, that has always been his argument since basically the Second Intifada, which is that he is the only one that can keep Israelis safe. And that went up in smoke on October 7th, right? It turned out he couldn't. And I think one of the reasons there's such pressure to retaliate against Iran is to show that again, because, you know, I was watching that texting with Jewish friends on Saturday night and they were like, oh, Bibi's doing a good job of keeping Jews safe. You know, it looks not great if that's your message.
So, Julia, will Israel retaliate against Iran for what happened over the weekend?
Well, it looks like they will against the better advice of the U.S., which backed them to the hilt on Saturday, and pretty much everyone else who's saying, dudes, take the win. I understand it doesn't look great, but like it's also a show of strength to kind of turn, you know, turn the other cheek and walk away. But Ben-Gvir is telling, is saying Israel needs to go quote unquote berserk. Smotrich is saying that Israel's response has to quote echo across the Middle East for generations to this. And to be fair, Iran's attack was unprecedented. It went after Israeli soil directly. You know, Israeli government is telegraphing that they will, in fact, retaliate. Now, the question of how they retaliate is, you know, if they were smart and still want to maintain the idea that they're going to retaliate, they don't send missiles at Iran, but they do, you know, a kind of honey badger Mossad style operation against some Iranian proxies or Iranian operatives somewhere, but they don't do something as provocative and escalatory as, you know, hitting Iranian soil, for example. So that way you can do kind of what Iran did, which is like, okay, we retaliated. We just had to do that to save face, kind of pro forma retaliation. Now we're all done. But the question is, does Bibi want to do that, or does he want to drag the U.S. into a war with Iran? And a lot of people, including in Israel, who don't like Bibi, fear that it's the latter, unfortunately.
Julia, thank you so much for putting some context around all of the news over the last few days. Talk to you soon.
Talk soon, Peter. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of PUC. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only PUC can offer. Follow us on Twitter at PUC News. I'm Ben Landy. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of PUC, Bob Tabador, and Ben Landy, executive editor at PUC.